Welcome to the Security Today podcast. I'm your host, Uncle Bear, and this podcast is brought to you by Sprinter Business Solutions. You can find more about them at sprinterit.com, but this is another episode of Bid to Bank. We're back at it again, coming in strong for the new year with a couple of Bid to Banks back to back. So I'm loving that, and I'm loving seeing, you know, guys on here that are just killing the game and able and willing to share how they're doing it so that the industry as a whole can grow. And with that, I knew as soon as I saw the Instagram platform, I had to get Henson Rogers on here with 700 Nano. So I asked him to come on, and he's been gracious enough. So I'm glad you're here, Henson. And we will go through the bid to bank process, from marketing to project management and all those sorts of things, and share kind of how you do things. But before we do that, I love to open up the podcast and just kind of give you the limelight for a sec to tell us your business and what you guys kind of specialize in, like how many guys you got, that sort of thing, just a synopsis over it. So take it away, man. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having us. So again, we're 700 Nano, and we're a teledata communication infrastructure contractor. So we fall in that electrical trade, but we specialize very much only in data and the infrastructure of it. We're not particularly a very large shop. At the highest, we were 9 guys. Right now, we're down to 2. But that's because we scale per the project. Anything I'm missing there?
Yeah, no. So you said, and we were talking about before the podcast, that you kind of got started in 17, right? So you've been running for, what was it, like 5-6 years now?
About six years now.
Okay, right on. And you're out of the Jersey market? No, you're doing good, man. Yes. You're out of the Jersey market?
We're out of the Jersey market. We service New York State and New York City as well, including the entire state of New Jersey.
Yeah, and so...
And we do...
Go ahead.
And we work on everything from fiber optic cables to your copper lines, whether that's something aerial, something from a data center, from an ISP, to the office space, down to the rack, down to the internet provider's devices, to the work area outlet, including commercial buildings and everything of that nature, including access control, cameras.
Yeah.
Everything in the ICP kind of falls under our umbrella, or something that we do.
Yeah, and that's exactly why I wanted to have you on here, because I know that you do touch access control and cameras, but you do a lot of that telelink too. And so I love to see guys, doing kind of the whole spectrum. That seems to be pretty common for the guys and the companies that I get onto the podcast, just because they're working at that high caliber. But I feel like in our industry today, like, to keep up and to, you know, get as much from the trough as you can, you kind of got to spread that wide variety. You know, you got to offer more services than just kind of like one thing. You know, there aren't too many guys anymore that are just camera guys. Like, they just come in and sling cameras. It's usually companies like yours that are, you know, branching out and doing as much as they can to help the customer and that client.
Yeah, definitely. And especially considering that a lot of things kind of all fall into data networks or a category cable now. It's very hard to, like you said, it's very hard to just sling cameras all day. A lot of customers like to just kind of keep it one person too. So that's where it gets a little tricky and a little finicky kind of running the business. Because what's the saying? The jack of all trades is master of none.
Yeah.
And you kind of see that happen in the overlap sometimes, because a camera guy might be very good at cameras, but not so good when it comes to the station. And there's guys who are very, very great at that. But it gets difficult when there's a lot of overlap and the job doesn't get done well, and then you have to come in and kind of do the damage repair on that.
Yeah, 100%. So let's just jump into the bid to bank questions then. So kind of from 700 Nano's perspective, and from, you know, you're kind of the king of the castle, you're running the show over there, so you're going to have a lot of that information. So I just want to kind of start with marketing and sales. And I know that I call it bid to bank, and then I usually start before the bid, because you got to get that you know, that business before you even bidding it out. But on a marketing to sales standpoint, and this is kind of good information for anybody, you know, looking into 700 Nano or wanting to know more about you guys, but what is maybe your most sold product or service? And I'm sure that's probably fluctuated in the last 6 years, but speaking right now, what are you kind of selling the most of in what you do? And then doing that, how do you get those jobs? Are you like sales pitching it, or are you putting ads out there? Is it all referrals? How's that kind of work for you guys in your shop?
So I'll start with how we get it. Right now it's very much referrals. When we started, it was more on friendlies and being seen. And maybe someone was curious when they saw our truck and they said, hey, what those guys do, or they'll see you with a box of, you know, a bunch of Cat 6 boxes or something like that. Or they saw the brand first before we actually started getting anything on, like going out on our own and making that phone call and having that conversation and putting a price in and winning that back. But
mainly, what are you selling right now? Is it, you said you were doing a lot of fiber at the end of the last year.
So, okay. So you were right. It does fluctuate. I want to say, there's no pattern to this. There is a section of months that will do very heavy in office space builds. Another month we'll do, and this is just purely Cat 6 enterprise fiber, you know, fiber to a switch, IDF to IDF. Very high demand in some months. It could be winter, it could be summer, it could be beginning of the year. I've seen no pattern to it. I guess it's just, you know, when leases are up, people are moving. We don't time that, but we can make sure we're available for that. Before the year closed, we were very heavy in Cat 6 placements. So a lot of people were changing offices. A lot of people were changing office furniture around. They might not necessarily be changing space, but they want to move outlets. And if there's no Slack, or it was installed by somebody else and they left Slack, but it's all crushed and not passing certification, then it has to go. So that's where we ended the year at. But our two top products are going to be outside plant, which is building infrastructure for ISPs, and of course office space build outs, which is going to be where you're the low voltage contractor for either a GC or the tenant.
Okay. And so when you say that that's primarily coming in on referrals, is that like referrals from predominantly customers who you've serviced and they're telling other people to use you, or is it like the GCs, or how does even a referral work? And I'm not in the ISP space, so this is really interesting to me, but how does it even work from like getting more ISP work once you've done it?
So it's a bit of both. Really depends on the scenario. There's some tenants that won't speak at all, but they love you and they'll call you back personally, but they won't give you away to somebody else. And there's one project where we got the referral on twofold. So we got it from the tenant and they spoke to somebody else. And then we had the property manager, who is also construction manager, because you'll see that a couple times in commercial builds where the property manager is also the construction coordinator. He took us to another build that he saw what we did for that office space, liked it, and then said, hey, I have another one. Do you want to go take a look at that one? And I said, absolutely. So one thing we'll do is never turn down work. Even if we can't manage the manpower to do it, we're not going to turn down the work. You'll figure it out. And if that helps anybody, you'll figure it out when you have the work. You'll figure out how to manage
it. Yeah, yeah.
But when the iron's hot, you got to pound. And that's just how we go about it. But what you don't want to do is fall short. So if you agree to everything, you take on that project, you got to deliver. Yeah. But pretty much that's how friendlies work. Someone, you know, have that conversation or leave at the end of their job as, hey, and I got this from a guy named Andy Frisella. This guy does, he's in Kansas City. He sells vitamin supplement stuff. But yeah, I got this from him, which is why it's important to have like people who are successful to listen to some to people doing better than you. He said,
for sure,
in something similar regard, you know, if the conversation ever comes up in low voltage, if we ever hear somebody needs something, you know, please mention my company. And I don't know, I can't quantify it, but I know I've had calls before and I'm like, you didn't look at our website. Because, you know, you look at the analytics of the website and you're not up. So no one new is checking you out.
Right.
And, but they have the number and they've called us. I've even heard one company, I asked them at the end of the job where they found us and they said Yelp. And I don't ever remember signing up anything on Yelp, but they found us on Yelp. Let the internet do the internet.
Let the internet do the internet. Yeah. Yeah. Right on.
But, so yeah, that's how the friendlies go.
Once you get those referrals and they call and they're like, oh, I got this job or I need to do this. Do you use quoting software or is it pretty much just, you just throw numbers out and you know it in your head, or what do you use to accomplish that when they're looking for a quote?
So now we use something called Stack. This was a very slow and painful pain. So running the business has always been failing forward, which is the most painful way to do it. But it built some character failing forward. But when we first started out, I did everything on paper. So I'm looking at the floor plan. I take some footage and I'm like, okay, well, this way, this laterally is 100 feet, and estimate, add up all the runs. It's a very tax and time consuming process. And time is money, right? And time is your energy. And running your business, you might end up being up 16 hours a day, 12 hours a day. When you're done with the field, you come home and then you got to do some more stuff. And all that time together, whether you're single or married or have a spouse, you know, you have to arrive for them as well. And that's easier said than done. But now we use Stack Construction, which saves a lot of time because now I'm not trying to estimate footages, but you can scale the drawing in the software, grab footages off of it, come up with your proposed routes through the software. You know, just kind of, I mean, you're drawing lines of where you anticipate you're going to be going on.
Right.
You know, of course, what makes the most sense for you to put up your supports and build your trays and everything like that. But we use Stack now, and that has helped me turn out proposals a little bit faster. And you can put your whole team on it too. The only problem is with those programs is you pay per the seat. And that's where it gets expensive. So when you're first starting out, you might not want to be paying per seat. But it's helpful.
Yeah. No, that's a great thing to bring up too, because I was actually just talking to A&B Locke. I had him on here for a bid to bank too that's going to be coming out. And he kind of mentioned the same thing, that it's kind of it's difficult to find those softwares where if you start paying by seat and you've got guys and it's like a mobile app and the software and their iPad all count as a seat, that really adds up quick and that can kind of, you know, sink you. So that's a good point. But it's called Stack Construction. I haven't heard of that one.
Yep, stackct.com.
Okay.
And Stack, if you're watching this, I'll take some sponsorships.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I'll hashtag it when I put it out so that they're looking. but yeah, so once you do that, once you get that done and you're working on that implementation, what is kind of your philosophy behind the bid? Do you just kind of do a flat rate for drops, or are you calculating a bunch of things in and it's custom every work or every job? How does that work for you?
So it is very specific to the job. Something to consider is that we are a union shop, so our rates tend to be a little bit higher, but we don't only do union work. So we do a lot of open shop work as well. So now I'm trying to compete with, you know, higher wages, a benefit cost that, you know, another company may not even have to deal with. And I'm competing against that. One thing is I try to maintain, and this was even when we were, you know, non-signatory, we weren't organized to a union yet, was trying to know what's an outrageous price and what's too low. And you don't want to be too low, you don't want to be too high. And that's always the hard thing to do when you don't know what other people are charging and what is a fair market rate. So I used to do standard dollar per drop. It's not, listen, I can go to one job and run 60 feet for an outlet, and I can go to another job and run 300 feet for an outlet.
Yeah.
And at 60 feet could have 10 freaking turns in it. And that 300 foot one could be straight down an outlet, straight to the other end of the wall and down an outlet. It's not the same labor. You know what I'm saying? That 100 foot drop might cost you more just because that 60 foot drop might cost you more because it's a lot more labor intensive. You might have to do penetrations. It might have to be in conduit. It goes through an exposed space. You can't be seen. So it's not, the world's not one size fits all. Your customers are going to try to make you one size fit all. It's just not the reality. I don't care how people want to paint it. That's just not the reality of getting a task done. So it is very project specific. But what is consistent is my labor rate per delinear foot. That doesn't change unless it's like a small change, and we don't do rollout costs, mobilization costs on like those small changes. So you have to make that back somewhere, because it doesn't work out for you to send one guy or two guys somewhere and then you only make $300. You know, you're at a loss at that point, especially if you don't have another job set up, and really depending on your size and your clientele list. And I think we can table that clientele list and job quantity per day. We'll table that for another conversation. But if that's the only job you have on your book for that day, you know, you're at a loss unless you yourself are doing this. And I'm sure you probably didn't get the business to be doing it yourself the entire time. That's a job.
Right.
So we take into consideration, again, what the existing space looks like. So it's up to the person. I tend to do that on my own to survey the area first, or if we've never been to the location, then I survey the area. If we've been to that location before, then we'll have some photos that we can kind of look at and see, hey, does this have to be concealed? Does it have to be in conduit? Is it going to be in molding, or is it some kind of drop ceiling or hard cap ceiling that we got to fish through? And then we'll kind of figure out what our costs are there from that point. Which is also important to have that conversation and kind of ask those inquisitive questions when you're on the phone with them as well. You know, what does your space look like? Do you know how your wires are right now, or where do they go, or what exactly are you looking for? Or is it a problem if you see this? Is it a problem if the support's outside? Like all these kind of, you have to see what's okay, because then you might be giving more, trying to do the right thing by them to have a very clean product where they need be very well accepting of being able to see certain things, which is going to affect your price. And not every customer is the same. Some will be willing to pay more to have that cleaner look, and let you dedicate that time. But again, time is money, and you have to know how your people work. You have to know how long it's going to take to do the task. So it's definitely our price is tailored to the project, but what
I think,
the time it takes to do a task is fixed. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. And I do want to highlight it, like specifically what you said, is it a problem if? I like that. I don't think that I've heard that from some of the guys that I've talked to or, you know, worked with in the industry. I think that a lot of times it's asked like, what do you need? Like, do you need this? Do you need that? Do you need that? But thinking on it on the almost on like the camera, like the negative of the picture, like thinking like, is it a problem if you see this, or is it a problem if it works or functions this way for your industry? That's key to taking care of your customer. I mean, you're really bringing their experience into it and kind of making it that custom job that you were talking about. So I like that. I like to hear that.
I like to pride ourselves on our customer experience.
Yeah. That's a big piece, and that's exactly why we talk about it, which we'll get to here in a sec, but that's why we bring it up in this bid to bank segment, because I feel as if the low voltage industry sometimes has trouble on that customer experience industry or that customer experience factor. You know, they're really good at having the knowledge of what they need to put in. Most of the time they're okay at putting it in and making it look clean, but a lot of people outside of our industry really don't know what we do. You know, we're just wizards. Like, yeah. you put it here, you put it there, it needs to work. You know, they don't know the complexity that has to be put into it. So touching on that customer experience is huge. But before we get to that, so let's say that, you know, you won the bid and you've put it out there, and now you're working your way into project managing that job, really starting on the life cycle, you know, of getting into the weeds on it. So elaborate on, is there any sort of software or apps? And I like to touch on this because I feel like some of the people that I know out there who are struggling in business, a lot of times they're struggling because they don't have the right tools at hand. Like, they might have a crimper, you know what I'm saying? They might have like, you know, a stripper or anything like that to do the work on site, but they don't have the tools on the back end to make it smooth or successful. So is there any software or apps you use during the project management phase to kind of keep things in line, keep the project moving and staying on top of tasks?
So let me preface by defending myself first. If any of our employees watch this, please don't hate me for this. The software is only as good as the users of it.
Yeah.
So we use a program called Monday. It's cloud-based. Mm-hmm. It's all web user interface. It can be on your phone, it could be on a desktop, laptop, iPad device, anything, Android. It could be on all those things. And it is up to, so I can put notes in there. I can put the project files in there. Everyone can open it in the field. They can mark it up, send it back. But again, it's only as good as the people who use it.
You gotta get them to use it. Yeah.
You gotta get them to use it. And I love our older workforce, but some of our older workforce don't like technology. They like paper. Right. And if you like to bring back a paper, and then someone else edits it and puts it on the digital portal, on the digital software. But we use Monday. And again, it's web-based. We can put our files up there. People can take photos in the field and upload it at the end of the day. And that's something I ask for. If you do some finish work or you've got progress somewhere, just give us a photo so the next person or anyone can look at it and see where we're at in the project. Has this task been completed? And then, you know, we can move on. I think the best workforce is the workforce you don't have to manage. Everyone knows what they need to do. You can get the project done. And communication is key. Now, I think I was not exactly like a social butterfly. I was very introverted as a young teenager. So I didn't like to talk if I didn't have to talk. And that was something I did very much, was just upload documents like, hey, I know my foreman's going to want this. Just upload it online. So that was where implementing Monday came in. And there's a bunch of other programs. For me, Monday is relatively cheap. It's like $600 a year for five. So it's probably both out to about $100 per person. But they give you five seats. There's no like one seat, two seat thing. It's like zero or five. And then the next one is 10, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
you don't get the scale like that. But I've seen Kahua. What was the other one? There's a bunch. If you like, just Google field productivity. I think these are the keywords: field productivity, not takeoff management, but like field project management. You'll see a couple of them, and some of them I saw really, you know, there's really good looking programs out there. I can't remember the name of all of them. I wish I could, but they're there. I think Togl has Togl.ai. So it's like an AI-based thing. I don't really know how that works, but
yeah.
You tell me AI and construction, I'll jump at it. But I don't know yet. But that's another. I believe they have some kind of field management as well. But
okay, yeah. We use Monday at Sprinter too. I work for Sprinter, nice. So we use Monday too, and it's nice because what I will say about it is you can use it simply. Or you can pour some time into it and make it really complex, and make it, you know, do things that you want it to do and those sorts of things. So Monday is definitely something that, yeah, I would suggest as well. So that's cool to hear that you're using it, because I don't know a ton of people out there using it in our field.
It has a lot of integrations too.
Yeah, it does. It does. So that's a good one. But moving on from project management and making sure that those things align, that's where we really get into the customer experience. So where during the life cycle of a project do you feel like the customer experience is the most important? So we do preach on this podcast that it's important all the way through, right? Don't stop or don't, you know, once you start, but where do you feel like maybe it is the most important from the very beginning of the job where you're bidding and quoting it, or they just called, to the very end of collecting payment or servicing or maintenance afterwards?
I'm trying not to say the whole thing like you just said.
No. It's okay if that's your answer. Yeah.
Ultimately, the entire time, it's definitely. I don't think there's one more than the other. At no point should you ever drop whatever standard of quality that you're delivering to that
customer.
Sure. But when you open up, all I could say is when you start with that customer, you know, you're there for them. The project's about them. It's not about you. You're there to deliver something to get paid on, right? And you're going to deliver something great for them to pay you on that they're going to love. So the experience has to be top notch. It can't ever falter. Like, you might not consider yourself a consultant, but you're a consultant. You come, you look at their drawings, you build something. You naturally are going to want to say something like, oh, maybe they shouldn't go here. Maybe we can do this, whatever. And that, I guess that might vary from person to person too. But I don't think there's any point that's more important than the other, unless, let's put this twist in there. Unless you're the type that just wants the introduction, work, don't talk to me while I'm working. And then at the end, then I'll say the middle is very important. While you're working, give them updates. And I don't mean we terminated a jack today. Tomorrow, we terminated two jacks. No, we're just saying that your customer, through that construction timeline, because it might be a Y timeline, it might be a week, or they might be moving in like 3 days from when you start. They just need to know and give them that peace of mind. We all want peace, right? Give them that peace of mind that, hey, the project's moving on time. And if you're going to be delayed, let them know that they're going to be delayed, but don't let it come into move-in day or day before move-in day and then say, hey, you know, we're not going to meet that date. It's communication. So I think if we're going to say, because I think everyone kind of knows that in the beginning and the end are important, so I'll probably say the middle is the most important. During construction, it might be the most important part. So they know that we're going to finish or we're not going to finish.
And keeping them updated during that, you're saying, during that time. Definitely. So let me ask this is kind of off the cuff from some of the questions I sent you before, but on that customer experience piece, let's say that you have maybe a hard customer, which I'm sure that you can say that to any business owner and somebody pops into their mind, right? But you have a harder customer that is maybe a little bit difficult to deal with. What sort of things do you feel like help ease that customer experience? Not necessarily make them an easy customer, because they're going to be a hard person to deal with no matter what you're doing with them. But what sort of tactics or postures do you take to help out when you're dealing with those difficult customers, or maybe even a difficult GC, if that would, you know, be more relevant?
See that sigh I just did there? Take a deep breath before you
get it. Breathe. There it is. Yeah.
Breathe. Get that oxygen flow. Get relaxed a little bit, because you're going to have to take the higher road. Or you don't have to, but it's better off for you to take the higher road when dealing with that person, whether it's a GC or a customer. And I'm not saying bend over backwards, but listen. Accommodate where needed to accommodate. And again, you're kind of back there as being a consultant. And I'm only speaking as being a business owner. I'm sure as a technician, you might not, you know, working for someone, it might not be in your realm to give advice to that person. You might need to, you know, move that up to your supervisor, your foreman, whoever. You might be jamming yourself up by giving recommendations and stuff like that. but you want to listen. And if you can't make that decision at that time, then you know what? I can't tell you right now, but I'll find out for sure, or I'll talk to somebody who can make that determination for you and give you an answer on that. But you've been hurt. And I think that's the most biggest thing. Most customers that are difficult and GCs that are difficult is either they felt they're not being heard. And you know, maybe it's not you. Maybe the plumber put his suit, you know, pipe in the wrong place, and now it's causing him money or causing him delays. Maybe the sheetrock just put sheetrocked walls and finished, you know, roughing in work wasn't done. Maybe they missed the outlet. It might not be you. And people have a lot of things going on. And I don't want to sound like a kumbaya guy. I'm not a kumbaya guy. But you got to understand first to be understood. And sometimes you don't want to understand. Sometimes you're like, yeah, I don't want to hear you right now.
Just let me work. Fix my problem.
Just listen, man. It costs you nothing to be a good human being. Just listen to what the people say. And if it's within the realm of reason, if it's not an arm and a leg, it's not going to cost you a lot. I'm not saying work for free, but if it's moved something over 2 inches, hey, you mounted on the wrong stud. Do you mount on this side of the stud? You got to pull it back and put it down. Cool. But if we're asking for massive change orders, absolutely not. And I don't know, you parked your vehicle outside, I have a material delivery. Where the hell did you expect me to park? These are accommodate. Okay, so now you have to stop work. He or she need their delivery. You know, go move the vehicle. Anything that it could be. You have Department of Buildings, you have insurances, you have inspections. You don't deal with any of that. You have your trade that you're gonna, you know, you have your work that you're gonna do. Your GC and your customer got tons of shit going on outside of you. So if it comes down to you, and it's not right, I'm not saying it's right that they attack you or come to you with a nasty attitude, but it's not you. And if it is you, well, fuck, man. I don't know. Figure it out. Make the experience a little bit better. Or at least approach it with, it's not you, and it maybe it's something else, and do the best that you can do for that person. That's all. But don't give into like astronomical things that are going to cost you a lot or make you lose out a lot. But I think if you help them, they respect
that. That's excellent
that,
advice.
Or if you can listen, they respect that. Thank you. I hope it was.
It is. And I think the word accommodate.
Those customers and GCs tend to open up a little bit more and experience after that with you. If it's pleasurable, it tends to be better.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that word accommodate, like that word allows for there to be boundaries. Like I'm not going to just, you know, like you said, bend over backwards or go beyond my means to make sure that your problem gets fixed and I still have problems. But the accommodation, you know, like making sure that everybody's experience around you is good, then they'll want to be around you. They'll want to give you more projects. They'll want to like work. I want to work with that guy. You know, every time I work with him, he communicates. If I need something from him, he's the first to jump up and be like, yeah, man, I can park over there. No problem. That's fine. You know? And so I think that accommodate, that's a good thing too. So moving from the customer experience into the bank, what payment method do you use to like collect after a job? So do you usually do like cards and checks? Is it like net 30 or is it kind of, I'm sure it's all over the board. You guys do a lot of different types of clients. So what kind of stuff do you use there?
So we accept every form of payment except crypto. I don't got a crypto wallet. But we leave the doors open for you to pay which is most easiest for you. Our experience, even though we leave the door open, people will still not pay on time and people stick to however they pay. So at the beginning of the contract, we can list our bank account, we can list our routing number, we can list a link to pay by credit card. If that link didn't have your credit card, if one of our links didn't accept American Express, and we'll give you another link to accept an American Express. If you want to pay ACH, you want to pay us electronically, that's fine. If you want to pay us by check, that's fine. we leave the door open to be paid, but unfortunately, I'm going to say 80% of our payments come by paper check still in the mail. So it is due on a day. You hope it goes out before that day to arrive to you on that day. And 9 times out of 10, it does not. We offer net terms. We used to go out up to 60. Cash flow got hard. I brought that back to 30. Cash flow got harder. I brought that back to 15. So you can give people all the days they want. They're going to pay when they want to pay. And unless, I don't know about you guys out there, unless you have a lawyer on retainer that you're going to tap up every year, and every time a customer doesn't pay, and there's a process too. You can't just, they didn't pay me in time, I'm a lawyer up. There's a process you have to go through. A couple notifications, a couple demands, and then proof that, like, hey, you know, they're really not trying to pay. And, you know, that's way down the line. Your bills are probably two or 3 months in, and you still haven't gotten paid.
That's a lot of energy, too.
To have all the doors open. It is a lot of energy, because all that time you're chasing down money, you could have been working towards new money. And you need to be focusing on getting your next project, getting that next, food on your plate. You can't spend too much time chasing stuff you did already. Which ends up being a very, it's a touching point for us, because we've spent a lot of time chasing money before. Leave the doors open. But so we're B2B. Excuse me, I don't know what's going on.
We're B2B.
Specifically for, I only want to deal with businesses. I don't want to deal with, people. And even then, especially at B2B, you're at the liberty of how that business pays and their accounting practices. When we've offered, and this is our experience, when we've offered net terms to companies, they don't pay within the net term timeline. So net 15, net 30, net 30, net 45, net 60. They don't stick to that net timeline. But companies that have said, and the only companies that have given us, like, hey, we pay in this time, and they always pay on time, we're talking $1 million, $1 billion companies. Like, these guys, that's their process. You know, it goes through all channels, and then you get paid. But smaller guys, I don't know. The couple $1 million companies, I'm talking, like, maybe they do, like, $5 million, $10 million, $20 million a year. Unless they're doing hundreds of millions a year and they're giving you net terms, those smaller companies, they pay when they're ready to pay you.
They pay, but again, how they pay.
Leave all the options there. They pay when they pay.
Right on. And so when they do pay, how do you invest back into your company? Because I know that some of the Instagram quality posts that you've put out, like, it feels like all around you've taken time on your logo. You've taken time on your brand. Like, it doesn't feel like anything that you've done was unintentional or just thrown up. And that was one of the reasons that I wanted to reach out, because I knew, like, just from seeing your stuff, I'm like, this guy cares about what it looks like. So he's going to care about probably a lot of other things as well. So how do you invest back into your company?
So I can't lie. When we first started, our logo looked different. And I had put together that. Actually, do I still have it? I don't have it here. I have it on a shirt, but not in the office here. But before we got to the logo, which is the infinity sign, it was two circles for the 700. And then the lambda symbol, which is the Greek symbol for wavelength. That's what we use in wavelength. But how ohm is for the resistor, for resistance, was in a circle. So we had 700, the number, and a nano balloon with the lambda symbol. Everybody kept asking us about Half-Life. Like, are you Half-Life? Are you Half-Life? Because it was the Half-Life symbol, right?
Yeah.
So my business partner at the time, he was like, yo, we got to change this thing. I'm like, all right, well, I still want the zeros. And if you talk about fiber, fiber is supposed to be unlimited bandwidth, right? There's no Our speed on fiber is not limited by the fiber. It's limited by the electronics on both ends, right? Mm. So we have this unlimited bandwidth over glass. So we did infinity, and we still got our two O's. And that was the thought. And I always had this thing of, like, yeah, this is going to be expensive to pay a digital designer to put this stuff together. But my business partner at the time, who had a hobby of photography, He was like, hey, Fiverr, we could find somebody on Fiverr. I'm like, what's Fiverr? So he showed me. I'm like, sure.
Yeah.
And got a guy, gave the guy what we, I drew it on a napkin. He took a photo. I had the design. You know, I laid it out on a napkin. I'm like, I want this in gold. And he got the guy. The guy came back with a couple of results. And I was like, that's exactly it. And that's, I had a font. I had a font I wanted to. And gave me that font. And that's how the logo came out, for very inexpensive. And then we saved it. And made sure never to lose it. So we have multiple copies in different places. So if a computer dies, we have it somewhere else to get it. But that's was that how our logo came about. How do we invest in our business? So again, early on, again, I don't have a business partner today, but when we had a business partner, a lot of our, we didn't take much money. We paid our employees, and then we tried to live very sparingly. So we paid our rent, we paid our bills, but there was no, you know, there was like no extra cash. You know, it was just enough to survive, and you know, it's not sunshine and rainbows, profit every day. I'm not swimming in a bank of cash in those early days. Today, I'm going to say in those early days, because today I'm still not swimming in a bank of cash. But we took a big chunk of the money and kept buying tools, buy a truck, buy another truck, make some more money. Yeah, we're paying our bills. Oh, we can't pay our bills this month. You know, scale it back, make sure the company's bills are paid. Did we get anything? Can we catch back up? And I kind of rinsed and repeat that, and got some more money, closed a bigger job. Did we have money? Okay, well, we're not going to go. We didn't catch, whenever we had a big job, we didn't exactly go catch back up our debt. We kind of said, well, what's our next move?
Mm-hmm.
Put it there, because we need to grow. We can't do one guy running around, two guys. The money's made in productivity in multiple places, right? And we can't do more if we don't have more getting done at the same time. And that was pretty much the ideology the whole time. And, you know, eventually, so how are we doing it today? Exactly the same shit. It's just me not getting paid. If there's a tool I want to buy, like we bought a puller, it was a good bit of money. The lab was a good bit of money. But I just don't take money for. I don't want my wife to hear, but yeah, I just don't get paid, and then I put that money back into the business. Now I have changed our pricing, so sure. I'm not going to get into the cable industry too much, but to not make the same mistake I made, just make sure you're working or doing work in a place where someone else isn't stipulating your pay. You're stipulating what your price is for your work, and stay in that realm, because you have your profits built. You have your profits and your equipment depreciation built in to your job costs, right? I'm going to say something that someone once told me. I might go off on a tangent here, but I feel it's relevant. Your splicer, your testing tools, your Fluke, your DSX 8000 or 5000, whichever one you got, your wire mappers, your whatever certifiers you got, OTDRs, all of that stuff. Yes, you buy it one time, but that's your asset. And you wouldn't be performing any of that on the job if you didn't buy it. You had to come up with that cash to purchase that asset, not your customer, right?
Mm-hmm.
So don't let anybody tell you it's a one-time buy. You charge the motherfuckers for it, because that's your asset. You have to calibrate that too, right? Someone told me that once. I'm like, yeah, I'm charging you for it. That's a one-time buy. What do you mean it's a one-time? Yeah, I bought it. What do you mean?
I use it every time. Yeah.
I use it every time. The DSX, you got to get calibrated every year. Your OTDR, you have to send back for calibration every 2 years. That's a recurring cost. You know what I mean? So, and then your guys are plugging it in and out. Those things wear. You know, you do an 800 outlet job. The thing's only ready for 1,500 meetings. You got to go replace that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, these are costs your customers are not thinking about. So you build that into your project costs, right? And whatever in your profit however much your profit is, and you want to stay in a realm above 20%. And someone taught me that, because I used to just charge 20% is not enough, especially with the runaway inflation we just had. And for the most time, I don't charge mobilization costs. You get what I'm saying? I give you a material and I give you labor and anything else that I charge you, but I don't charge it for us to get there. And it charges to get there, it charges to get material on the site, but I don't charge you for that, right? So whatever you built into your costs, whatever you built into your profits, and it's crazy to think that 20% is not enough for you to, 20% profit is not enough for you to run your business, your insurance costs, your workers' comp, your payroll taxes, your owners deal with a lot. It's not just what you take home. I know people look at their paycheck and they're like, that's it. A lot more goes into you. And a lot more goes into the customer. And then there's a lot more in the business that we have to comply with governments and agencies and regulatory. So it's a bunch of shit you got to consider. But you need to take that into consideration, what your operating costs are as a business as well, when you look at your price and what you're charging for labor, especially if you put all of your price into the labor. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah,
I do now still take a percentage off of whatever that profit is. I'm not putting it in a separate bank account, but I'm being conscious of it. Or I'll look at a project. So I'll look at our work in progress report and make a determination if there's something that I want to purchase and what do I anticipate. Because I should be able to look at a cost value of a job and know how much I expect to make off of it, and then say whether we're going to purchase something on this or not, or whether I need to catch up on debt, whether the business is behind on some debts that we need to take care of. So make a work in progress. I didn't know of a work in progress report. And yeah, I didn't know about that. So build that list of your work in progress that you have of jobs you know you're going to, you know you've been awarded. It's just a matter of completing them. And look at how much you expect to make and then what you plan to either do with that, whether that's reinvest in the business and buy the asset to move the business forward or take care of some debts.
Awesome. Yeah, excellent. So going from that, I always like to ask the last two questions, or the humbling question and the bonus question. So from the humbling question aspect, what's one area that you feel like 700 Nano is maybe soft on or you'd like to get better at? And I always like asking this question at the beginning of the year, because now, you know, we're in the new year mindset. So you're like, yeah, this is what I'm going to work on. So what do you feel in that arena?
Well, something that we could do better. I definitely want to say turning out projects a bit more. I once had this feeling of I wanted everyone to be an estimator, everyone to be a project manager, everyone to be able to wear every hat. What we have is field, and I think the field is good. I don't think we have a training problem. So training could be a little bit better. I'd like to be able to do more certifications, but the money's just not there for it. And I'd like us to be able to turn out jobs faster by having, you know, more estimators. Right now, I'm the only estimator, so we need another estimator to make that happen a little faster. But I think we're strong in work.
Right on.
To do a little better getting everybody to be on the same page as far as our mission and what we stand for, the culture. I think we could do a little better on getting the culture, but no one's better than anybody, and we can all help each other, and we could all be there for each other. And I think that's right what we need to do.
Yeah, that's good. And that estimator piece, man, I feel like I read something this week that had, I don't know if it was an actual statistic or if they were just saying it, but they were saying that in the industry right now, estimators are like, it's the biggest shortage that we've had. So that's a key aspect to, you know, building the business and having a strong output rate and kind of close rate is making sure that estimating happens. And if you know how to estimate, like it's kind of like a hidden gem in your skill set, because if you can do that, that's pretty valuable to most places. But that's good, man. But based on your experience, so the bonus question is, and this is my favorite question because I love to hear the different takes on it, but based on your experience moving from the bid to bank and everything that we just discussed, where would you say the focus is most critical in the completion of the job through all those things? And then do you have any takeaways for listeners in regards to that focus?
I think the focus is making sure, and this is the critical part, making sure you completed all the tasks that were asked of you and stuff you might have seen while completing those tasks or performing those tasks that could be a potential problem in you finishing that project and bringing that up. So when you're there to do the finish work, which is put on like face plates and little labels and do all those small tasks, it's not something major that's floor's done, painting's done. You want to bring a ladder back in here? I think the big focus is making sure you completed all the tasks and found things that could be a potential problem while you're doing the work and bringing that to the attention of the PM, the foreman, the owner, whoever it is that you're, the architect, whoever it is that you're supposed to talk to about those problems. That's going to differ per job. I think that's where the focus is most necessary.
Don't be afraid to say something
about estimators. Don't be afraid to say something. And you might get barked at, but don't you say you that sensitive that you don't want to get barked at? Better that you bring it up and you get barked at than you want to leave the site because you're almost done and then you got to go do some major work because you didn't bring it up earlier. But
definitely
those two things, and this is why I kind of was like, I want everybody to be an estimator, but I just see I feel like everybody has the same capacity of things, right? And I don't mean to talk down about anyone, but I've come to realize, like, I can't hold everybody to the same standard I hold myself. And even though I know everyone's capable, maybe they don't believe that of themselves. And maybe that's something that they need to cross that threshold at their point in time. It's their race, not necessarily my race that I want for them. It's their timeline of doing when they get there. But being able to see something during the progress of work that could be something potentially missed or a problem, something that an estimator can see in a drawing without being in the field. You get what I'm saying? So you have to have that eye to detail, or detail or eye. How the hell do you say that? Anyway, but you know what I'm saying? You gotta have that.
Yeah.
You need to be able to look at it and spot it out and then call it out and say, hey, this is a potential thing, or hey, I'm going to mark it up. I'm going to price this as is, but I'm letting you have this little call out that I see something that could be potential. That might be a potential change order in the future. We can address it now. We can address it after the contract. Let me know how you want to handle, but I see it already. I've let you know that I've seen it and that it could be an incurred cost down the line. But I've seen it already. The field's going to know about it. And when the field sees it through Monday, because we're going to put it on Monday on or whatever project management software that you use, we're going to let the entire staff know about it. All the personnel knows about it. And now you know I know about it. GC knows I know about it. Architect knows I know about it. Owner knows I know about it. But we have all seen it. And we put it out there. And that's where back to the focus and back to the estimator. That's that key eye of detail, key to detail, whatever. That thing is an important characteristic.
Yeah. Wonderful. Well, awesome, man. That is the bid to bank questions. So I just am so glad that you came on, and I feel like you dropped some stuff that people can take away and kind of start stitching into what they're doing, and maybe even just reminders. You know, I feel like sometimes I listen to these things and I'm like, oh yeah, I gotta think about that next time I'm estimating, you know? So thanks for coming on. But one thing that I love to do is just give a little shout out to where they can contact you at, where they can get in contact with you, because I know sometimes people listen to things and they're like, man, I'd like to ask that guy a question. And so where are some places that they can find you if they have any questions or if they want to comment on anything said?
So we are on Instagram and TikTok, both at 700 Nano. Feel free to email our general email, which is still contact7n@gmail.com. I look at that email regularly. You can always reach us there if you want to send us anything, or just DM us on social media. Either one is fine. You might reach us faster, or I'll be able to answer faster if it's a DM and TikTok or social or Instagram.
Yeah, that's for sure. That's me too, man. People email me and they don't hear back, but if they DM me on Instagram, they'll get something that night, you know, while I'm thumbing through it. But, yeah. Thanks so much for coming on, man. I really appreciate your time, and we'll talk to you soon. So, all right, brother. Thanks.
For sure.